Tonight, we're continuing in our series, Love Does, looking into the book of James. And I hope this has been helpful for you. I hope it's been challenging. James is not a guy who minces words. He's a person who's gone on a personal journey himself. In fact, if you're kind of new to church or maybe coming back to church, you need to know that the author of this book that we're looking at in the New Testament is a guy who is the half-brother of Jesus. He grew up around Jesus. He actually didn't even believe Jesus was the Messiah. He was very sarcastic. He was very put off by that claim, and he didn't really realize that to even be true. Didn't claim it, didn't believe it, didn't want to believe it. And then something happened in his life that convinced him otherwise. And it wasn't that, you know, Jesus wrote him a letter. It wasn't that, you know, some other good people came around and said, hey, you should think about this guy, Jesus. It wasn't that other people loved him well. And those are maybe good things that did happen. But James had a personal encounter with the resurrected Christ. And when you have a personal encounter with the resurrected Christ, things change. And James came face to face for himself with the realization that Jesus really is who he says he is. And so he went from this journey of a skeptic to a person who was very sold out for his faith, actually even to the point of martyrdom in the sense of giving his life for the truth about who Jesus is. And so maybe in your spiritual journey, you've got questions, you've got doubts, you've got concerns, you've got things that you're still trying to mull over in your own mind. I can tell you to rest assured that this author, he wrestled with those things like you do. And he got to a place where he went, I'm convinced. He got to a place where he understood. He got to a place where it became real for him. And so my invitation for you is just to go on the same journey with James. Keep wrestling, keep asking, keep seeking. And I promise you, God loves to answer those kind of prayers, loves to meet people with those kind of journeys. Tonight's we're kind of picking up in James chapter 4. So if you have your Bibles, you can go there. In fact, I'm going to let the lights be up a little bit because I'm going to read a chunk of scripture that I want you just to kind of have you hear and experience a little bit. And I'm just going to warn you up front that it's not going to feel good. In fact, you're going to hear this and be like, man, James woke up on the wrong side of the bed. You know, he needs like a latte or something because he needs to chill. I mean, this is kind of abrupt. And we've said this about James. James is not a guy who minces words at all, is he? He's a guy, remember, you have those friends who take 20 minutes to say one sentence. And then you have those other friends who are like, hey, pfft. Right? And they just call it like it is. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, and even if it's hard to hear, at least you appreciate the truth and the honesty. And this is what James is going to do tonight to a group of followers of Jesus who have a very Judaism is their backdrop, their understanding of who they are and how they approach the world, how they see things. And he's got some challenging words for them that I think will feel abrupt. In fact, you'll hear a few words in here and you'll be like, it's going to bristle against you. And I think it's okay. Because here's the point of tonight. I'm going to tell you right now. I think we're going to see in this passage two pulls of the human heart that try to pull us one way or another. And then you're going to hear the remedy, the cure, to fight back against those. Because that's what James is really writing about here. To this early group of believers, he's writing to them. He says, look, there's going to be these struggles that kind of pull against your heart, and it's going to want your heart to go one way or the other. And what you really need is to know that God has a cure, that you don't go either way, that you actually go a third way, and it's the best possible way to go. And so it's going to sound harsh, what I'm going to read in a moment. You can read along with me. If you have your phone, you can actually pull it out and look at it in YouVersion. I wrote, I'm putting the scripture in the New Living Translation. Typically, we teach out of the NIV or the ESV sometimes. But the New Living Translation is kind of very conversational language, very conversational English. And so I just want you to kind of hear it like he would have said it in those times, where he's writing this letter, he's writing to these people, and he's giving them some understanding. Remember, the whole overarching theme we've said throughout this whole book of James is that the gospel, this good news of Jesus, the gospel is the power of Jesus, and it's the story of him. It's about transforming people, not just informing people. So what he's getting ready to say is about, it's a challenge, and it's going to push you, But he's always pushing people to be transformed, not just merely more informed, right? This is about transforming our character and our soul, that we become more and more like Jesus. We reflect him more and more in how we make decisions, how we approach life, how we interact, how we react to people. And he's going to challenge us on some things. And so here's what he says. I'm just going to read all 10 verses tonight, which we don't typically do, but I want you to kind of hear it in one chunk, okay? Are you ready? I've given you plenty of time. Here we go. James chapter 4, starting verse 1. What is causing the quarrels and fights among you? Don't they come from the evil desires that war within you? You want what you don't have, so you scheme and kill to get it. You are jealous of what others have, but you can't get it. So you fight and you wage war to take it away from them. Yet you don't have what you want because you don't ask God for it. And even when you ask, you don't get it because your motives are all wrong. You want only what gives you pleasure. You ask with these wrong motives, he's saying. And then he says, you adulterers. Whoa, James, okay. You adulterers, don't you realize that friendship with the world makes you an enemy of God? I'll say it again. If you want to be a friend of the world, you make yourself an enemy of God. Do you think that the scriptures have no meaning? That they say that God is passionate, that his spirit that is placed within us should be faithful to him, and he gives grace generously. As the scriptures say, God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. So, humble yourselves before God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Come close to God, and God will come close to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, for your loyalty is divided between God and the world. Let there be tears for what you've done. Let there be sorrow and deep grief. Let there be sadness instead of laughter and gloom instead of joy. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up in honor. Heavy, right? Isn't there a part of you that you read through that or you hear that and you go, James, you're talking about other people, not me. I'm tight. I'm faithful. I'm good. And I think these words, friends, if we can go on a little journey tonight, might challenge you as they've challenged me. And it might cause you to see things maybe from a slightly different angle. And I bet they will invite you into something that you really, really long for. But even you find yourself fighting this pull deep within your character, deep within your heart. This pull one way or the other. Remember, this is about two pulls that are going to compete and wage war on your heart. And then it's really about a remedy, a third way of what we're called to live about. What causes fights among you, James says. How many of you have ever been in a fight? Not fist fight, but just a fight. We won't ask about fist fights because I can pretty much pick out who I want on my team. you've been in a fight with somebody over something. What causes these fights and quarrels among you? Have you ever looked around your week and just noticed the fights going on around you? Have you ever stopped to consider all the little squabbles and quarrels and fighting that goes on around you? This week, I am reminded of siblings who fight over simple things. Things that really don't matter in life. People that are born into the same family have deep love for one another. And yet, who turns off the light becomes a war. I'm reminded of this, not in my family, of course, but in someone else's family. But I'm reminded of the guy who I was driving behind on Sunrise in the Dodge Ram truck, who decided he wanted to instruct everybody on how to drive better. And he proceeded to roll down his windows and yell at everyone that would come around him or that he couldn't get passed around. And then occasionally he would, you know, kind of point to something in the sky with his non-pointer finger. I don't know what he was pointing at. I kept looking, but he just had this fight within him. I'm standing at the concession stand at a softball game. Brian, we're there. And the guy in front of us, who is probably 80, begins yelling at the concession stand people who are behind a brick wall and a window. You're not going to get to them. But he's yelling at how they can't cook hot dogs fast enough. And he's letting them know how incompetent they are. And I thought, you're 80. Let it go. Man, eat pizza or something. Just the fight within them. It's just, I just promise you this week, just spend some time looking at the fights and quarrels going on. I mean, this is without the news. This is without any newspaper article. This is just going on around you. Then ask yourself this question. Have you ever noticed the quarrels and fights going on within you? A little closer to home, I know. Isn't it amazing? I'm blown away at my own frustration level. I'm blown away at just how simple little things can frustrate me, and they drive me to a point where I want to let anger rule over me. And not because of the other person, but simply because I don't have control. You ever been there? See, if you look hard enough, my hunch is you'll begin to see these quarrels and fights rising up within you. Begin to see and realize that when people are driving next to me and they just proceed to move over into my lane and they didn't see me, I'm upset because I'm the center of my universe. And how dare they not see me? You ever been there? I'm being brutally honest. With my own heart and with your own heart, if we're honest with each other and begin to see some of these patterns that go on, begin to discover how empty this begins to play out in life. And here's what I wrote down for this week. I think the real reason for most relational conflict, not all, but most relational conflict is this. We end up adopting an attitude and a belief that others exist to serve me. I just begin adopting an attitude or belief that others around me exist to serve me. And in a lot of ways, I begin living with an elevated heart. That's the first pull. It's when this elevated heart begins to rise up within you and within me, within us. When we begin to see other people as less than, and we begin to see other people as, you're here to meet my needs. See, what causes relational strife and conflict in my own marriage is when I don't feel valued more than my wife, if I'm really honest. This is the big boy pants time. This is where I have to look in the mirror and go, wait a minute. That's twisted. That's selfish. That's all about self-reliance. And the Bible speaks so much against that. And this elevated heart begins to take and rise up within each of us when we begin to see as others existing, no matter what shape or form. In what now, I know we have a giant service industry that we navigate our lives through every single week, whether it's, you know, going out to eat or whether it's the people around us or the people underneath, quote unquote, who work for us and that type thing. And it's very easy in our culture, isn't it, to begin to live with an elevated heart where I matter more than this person. And we begin to measure it out. We begin to actually figure out and tip it on the scale of who actually matters most. And I think what we have to come to grips with is, look, people don't exist to serve you. People don't exist to serve you. There may be service industry where they can meet a need and provide a service that you're paying for, but people don't exist to serve you. And I think in our culture, we get this confused sometimes. People don't exist to make your life more comfortable. People don't exist to make your life more compatible and easy. And I think it's an easy journey for us to get to the place where, in a very worldly, broken way, we can begin seeing the people around us that way. And we stop seeing them as the imago Dei, made in the image of our Creator, that they have worth and value because God says they do. and we begin seeing them as less than, and an elevated heart begins to climb up and pull, and our heart to live more and more elevated. Make sense? That this begins to well up in our lives, that Jesus lived and called his followers to say, look, to have an others-focused kind of view, not a me-centric kind of view. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life, to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus modeled this so well. I think that's what attracted people to him. He was so radically different in how he viewed people. So radically different in how he interacted with people. That's why he could have interactions with people that other people would be like, whoa, why are you talking to them? And he just lived differently. And he began to value people around him, and people were drawn to that. That it wasn't just about my pleasure being the ultimate goal in life. And in our culture, so much of that is a pull within our own heart to elevate, to say it's about this. See, the Greek word for pleasure here in verse 3, where it says you're seeking everything about your pleasure, is the word hedonai. And hedonai is this, it's where we get the word hedonism from. It's just this idea of everything being about pleasure. And everything being about the ultimate goal of anything in life is to bring you pleasure. And in a service industry, in the service-driven culture, that's really easy for that to become the baseline, right? And yet the Bible in James right here is challenging that and saying that just leads to an elevated heart. That leads to you creating something, and you become the center of the universe. And I'm going to put it this way. Universe is you, okay? It becomes, you become everything. And when you see people as existing to serve and meet your needs, then really you are the center of your universe. Because everything revolves around you. And it's always about you. And everything should be for you. And so you become easily irritated, easily frustrated, easily angered, easily disappointed when people don't meet the expectations that you have in your universe. Make sense? And so James is hammering home with this. What causes these fights? What causes these quarrels? What creates these battles? And he uses imagery of people fighting with actual, like, warlike instruments, and also other people who are just fighting, squabbling on the street. And he says, in every extreme, what's developing this is these evil desires within you, and it's beginning to pull you to live with an elevated heart, and where everything's, you're up here and everyone's down below, and everything exists to be about you. And our prayer in that moment needs to become simply this: God, help me see people the way you see people. Because it's so easy in my culture to want to see people as less than. And I need to see them as the imago Dei, made in the image of God. They are valuable and deeply loved by you. And they need to be by me. They have worth. And they're not just fulfilling a role or a service, but they're an entity. They're a person. God, help me not to drift toward this elevated heart. And in my grade school days, driving around our neighborhood on our BMX bikes, okay? So driving is the wrong word. Riding around on our BMX cool bikes, because we were cool like that. We would occasionally get to these construction zones where they had a giant pile of dirt. That's awesome for boys, okay? And so we would play a little game called King of the Mountain. So anyone ever played this game, King of the Mountain? It's much better in snow. Without the caliche and rocks and all that kind of stuff. It's much, you know, occasionally ice, you know, hits your head and that hurts too. But King of the Mountain is a really simple game. You claw your way up to the top of the mountain, and then you pretty much do everything you can to stay there. And other people will try to get up to the top of the mountain, kick you off the mountain. Your job is to kick them off the mountain before they kick you off the mountain. Make sense? King of the Mountain. I guess Queen of the Mountain, you can play that if you want. I don't know. But that's the kind of the goal of this whole entire game. And the whole point of the game is about elevating yourself to the top of the mountain. And everything below you is just trying to claw their way, and they're trying to take you away from being on top. And so you've got to push them down. And you've got to keep them off from being above you. Sounds a lot like life. in certain times. Yeah, it's camouflaged a little different. It's hidden a little different, but it still plays out in a lot of the ways in which we live and how we approach life. And it becomes really easy for us to live with an elevated heart. And it's like James was saying, why do you fight so much? Why do you have all these quarrels? It's because you've turned your personal preferences into like these core convictions that really aren't convictions at all. They're just personal preferences. Get over it. Roll with life a little bit better. In fact, if you want less drama in life, just learn to be a person who rolls with it a little bit, because life's not going to always go like you expected. Does this remind you of the first chapter? Consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you face trials of many kinds. Isn't that how he started his book? And then he's kind of revisiting. All these concerns and squabbles and quarrels, most of them are just elevated because you're living with an elevated heart and you're making it all about you and you're the center of the universe. You. And James is saying, this is not how you're supposed to live. God has something different. In fact, Christ is giving you everything you'll ever need. Everything you've ever needed or wanted or deeply sought after has been given to you in the gospel, in the life and the death and the resurrection and the relationship you get to have with Jesus. And this grace and this hope that God gives you is all for you. You don't have to earn it. You don't have to work for it. You don't have to claw your way to the top and then try to stay there. You just get it. And because you get it, and because you have everything, let that transform how you now live and how you interact. That you don't have to be a person who fights. And I know this can go to temperament, and I know some people are wired a little more high-strung than others, and some of you are like babies in the family, you're like, whatever. You know, it's just, for us firstborns, it's a challenge sometimes. It's a challenge to learn when to shut your mouth. Isn't it? Man, I've battled that my whole life. Just learn to just be quiet. Listen, what causes these fights and quarrels? It's these evil desires that well up within you. And if you allow it to, this pull of wanting to grow and elevate your heart will lead to this elevating of everything in life. And you'll want to push everyone down. And what James is saying is you will struggle with this pull to have an elevated heart. And secondly, this next part that he's going to get into is you will struggle with a pull to live with a divided heart. Your heart's going to want to be elevated. It's going to want to put other people down. And it's also going to want to live this divided life. And he uses these strong words. He starts off verse 4. You adulterers, don't you realize that friendship with the world makes you an enemy of God? You know, in first pass, that seems like a tough language to interpret. What's going on? Well, obviously, we all know what adultery is. It's when you have one love, a true love that you've committed to, and then you choose to say, I'm going to have a lover on the side. And all throughout the Old Testament, isn't this what some of the people of God are accused of? God's saying, look, I've rescued you. I've brought you in. You're my people. And yet you keep wandering off to these other idols and to these other false gods that you want to give your devotion, your allegiance to. And James is saying, look, you guys are in this place. And he's saying to these early followers where your heart, it has this pull to either want to elevate itself over everyone else, or it's going to have this pull where it wants to live divided. It wants to live where, yeah, I'm all in for God, and yet there's so much of this world that I want to be a part of. Now listen, we are in the world, right? So we don't live outside of the world. We live in it. And so there's this pull and this tension that will always be there for us. To want to find our own security, to want to find our own hope, to want to find our own sense of belonging and significance and meaning by the world's systems and by the world's ways of how it goes about it. And yet the Bible continually calls us to say, hey, the life of following Jesus is a life that's counterculture at times. It's a life that says, look, the best possible way to live is to arrange your life around this guy Jesus and to begin to live more and more how he lived. In fact, that's a series we're going to look at following Easter, is this idea of life, just these spiritual ingredients for the best possible way to live life. And what James is saying is this pull of the world is going to be constantly coming after you, constantly asking you to choose its ways and to choose its ways over God's ways. And yet all throughout this text, James is calling us to say, look, don't buy into that pull of the human heart. Don't let it become an elevated heart, and don't get divided in your loyalty. See, God has kind of made us a one-track people. And as much as we want to straddle the fence and say, okay, I'm all in for God, and yet I'm going to pursue so much of the world's ways and kind of live by their principles and live by their assumptions and all these things, there's going to be this tension that exists. And what James is calling out to each one of us is that's a tension that doesn't go away. You will need to manage your way through and navigate your way through it. And when you recognize it, you need to choose in those moments who you're going to follow. You need to choose in those moments, in those areas of life that you have to hold on to, that you have to navigate. See, that's why Jesus said words like, you know, where your treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be. It's just the way it's going to play out. No one can serve two masters, he said. You'll either hate one, love the other. You'll be divided. So much of the scriptures calls about this idea of this divided heart. And a full heart, a full person who's pursuing this full life Jesus offers is a person who has aligned their heart fully toward God. Now, is that without ever any kind of hiccups or step backs? No. I mean, reality is we're going to face that this side of heaven all the time. But what James is challenging is watch your heart. Don't fall into being pulled back. In fact, what he's saying is this pull to want to have you live with an elevated heart, and this pull to want to live with a divided heart where you're seeking everything the world has to say and kind of putting God on, you know, kind of placating God, and I'll show up on Sunday and that type thing, is he's saying, look, you're going to have these pulls all the time, but here's the way that you can break free from the grip of both of those pulls on your heart and actually choose a third way, to choose the best possible way to live. And here's what he begins to say. It's all about this posture of submission. Here's what he says in verse 7. So humble yourself before God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. You come close to God and God promises to come close to you. It's this posture of submission. Verse 10 says, humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up. The cure is we need to become people who live with humble hearts. Now, how do you produce humility? How do you aim your life at humility? What does that mean? I think a lot of the humility is kind of a byproduct of something you get when you just start saying, God, the best I know how, I'm going to obey you in this situation. The best I know how, I'm just going to choose to follow and walk after you. The best I know how in this moment, in this season, in this space in life, I'm going to aim my life in your direction. The best I know how, I'm choosing you. And I'm choosing to come in under your authority. That's what submission is about. In the Greek, it's literally this idea of coming in under the authority of God. It's submitting our hearts to God and saying, God, you're the one in charge. It's saying to God, God, you're God, I'm not. And see, people who live with a divided heart and people who live with an elevated heart, they may never say the words, I'm God, but they live from that vantage point. In a submitted heart, a repentant heart, a heart that's humble before God says, God, you're God, I'm not. And the best I know how, I want you to be the leader of my life. You go first, I'll go second. And I begin to submit these different areas to my life. I begin to say that I live with a true faith. And see, true faith responds to God actively, not passively. It begins to live this obedience to say, in this moment, I'm choosing to actively live and follow after you. I'm not going to just passively say, hey, God says this, that's a nice thing, and that's a good thing for other people. But it actually says, I'm going to actually choose to live this way. And how I approach everything I have in life. See, when I live under his authority, I don't need to elevate myself because he's going to do it. Humble yourselves before the Lord and he will lift you up. He's going to take care of you. He's going to be your provider. He's going to be the person who protects you. He's going to be the one who watches over you and guides your life. When you live under his authority, you don't have to have a divided heart about what's going to matter, because when you begin chasing after those things, you realize those things don't last. And they're ultimately not something that's going to be fulfilling or satisfying. It may be a flash of satisfaction in a moment, but it flickers away and it's gone. And you need something of deep significance. When I live under his authority, I don't have to worry about his love fading away based on my performance. I just live under his authority of, God, you've done everything for me. I can't believe how much you love me. I'm blown away by your majesty. I'm blown away by the invitation I get to live life with you. I'm amazed by that. And you live with this wonder all the time that it grows within your heart. Remember, James is writing to a strongly Jewish people group. And when he says some of these phrases like, you wash your hands, you purify your hearts, it would have hearkened up all of the rituals that they would have gone through as they went toward the temple. And what they were saying is, in this moment, I am strategically, intentionally choosing to get my life right before God. That's what submission is. It's saying, God, I want to come in under your authority, not just with, you know, word of mouth, but I'm actually choosing, being deliberate, being intentional about living under your authority and letting you be in charge. So let's think it through application. Okay, so what? What does this mean? This idea of an elevated heart, a divided heart, and yet a humble heart is what God desires and longs for most. What does that begin to look like? And here's what I think it may be. In a sentence, I think a humble heart is an open heart to God, and it's a yielded heart to him. It's an open heart before God, and it's a yielded heart to God. Where there's no secret compartments. How many of you have a car with secret compartment? I've got a vehicle, right? And in the back, if you just look at the back of the vehicle, lots of storage and stuff that's cool there. But the floor, if you push a little button, lifts up. Whoa, I know. And you can actually store other stuff underneath it, like umbrellas and chairs and things like that. Food is nice. And so you put that, you know, beef jerky underneath there, that type thing. And you can hide that from other people. So like when people come in to put their luggage, they're like, oh, there's no beef jerky. There's no luggage. Okay. But you know there's beef jerky because it's underneath the secret compartment. And I think in a lot of ways, how do you live like a person who has a humble heart? It's saying, God, I have an open heart before you. I have a yielded heart to you. The best I know how. There's no secret compartments to life. And I think in our culture, friends, in our faith journey, a lot of times, in our own faith journey, in our own walk with Jesus, we can get to a place where we say, Jesus, I am all in, sort of. I am here, kind of. Jesus, you can have every area of my life except this one, secret compartment. Okay. I will trust you. I'll show up every Sunday. I'll go. But don't ask me, like, for my wallet, okay? Don't ask me to, like, honor you with what you give me because that's my money and I work really hard for it, okay? And I'm working the 12-hour shifts and, like, I don't see you there. So this is mine. This is the secret compartment. You, no touchy, no access. There's a restricted access for you, God, okay? And I think there's truth in that for a lot of ways. There's a place where we can get to where self-reliance becomes so strong. And in our culture, self-reliance is promoted, isn't it? Now, it's good. You don't want to be a pushover. It's healthy. But it can get to a place of being unhealthy spiritually, where I make it all about me. See, it could be a relationship compartment. Okay, God, you can have every area of my life except this relationship. This one, I really want this one to work, and so I'm going to work really hard on it, and I know you might have some thoughts about it, and I don't want to hear those thoughts, okay? So I will take care of this area. You help me with all these. These are all open book before you, okay? I think it could be that. It could be a finance compartment. It could be anger or hurts from your past. It can be stuff that happened to you, and you say, God, I'm all about right now, and I'm all about the future you have for me, but like this, I'm holding on to this because this is ammo, okay? Don't you ask me to forgive people. You don't know what they did. Okay, you were there. You kind of saw, okay, you know, but like, that's ammo, okay? This is off limits, okay? And we can have compartments with that. We can have a work or maybe school compartment where, God, look, I know you want me to be a light, at work or to be light at school, but like if I bring you in here and I like talk about you, people might talk about me and I'm not cool with that. So just every other area is cool right here, but when I get to work and I punch in or if I go to school and class, it's just, you know, I'm not going to bring you there, okay? That's just kind of a secret compartment for you. Maybe it's a habit or an addiction that you have. Maybe it's a life plan compartment. Where God, you can have every access. I have these life plans that I have marked out for me. And I have worked really hard and I've got it all laid out. No touchy. Okay? And now like if I crash and burn or something happens and my resume doesn't get accepted, then I'm gonna call on you to mostly kind of step in and help that get started again. Okay? But this is my life plan. I've worked it out. I know I haven't asked you what your thoughts on my skills and abilities and how I should use those for you. I get that, but this is my plan. Okay? And so I think a lot of times in our spiritual journeys, we can get to a place where we say, yeah, I want to have a humble heart, but we end up having these secret compartments. And it's where we hide things. And a humbled heart comes before God and says, God, the best I know how, I'm open for you, and I'm yielded to you. I'm open before you, and I'm yielded to you. And friends, when you begin to live with that kind of heart, God can begin to take your life on a journey and on an adventure that you will enjoy and that you will wake up and say, that was one of the best decisions I ever made. To open up my heart to God and to yield to Him, even when I still had questions and even when I still had some doubts and even when I still had some struggles, because it's way better than living with an elevated heart and it's way better than living with a divided heart to live humbly before my Creator and humbly before my Rescuer in Jesus. Say, Jesus, you take the reins. Jesus, you take the wheel, that song, all that stuff. You lead me forward. And so I want to pray for you for this week. Here's my invitation, kind of my challenge to you this week. Every single one of us has got secret compartments. If we're just honest with ourselves. And the challenge this week is to find out, to remember, to recall, to bring before God that secret compartment. And to say, God, here it is. I want your influence in this area of life also. I don't want to keep you and give you restricted access. And as we remember communion in just a minute, as we continue to worship, I'm just going to invite you throughout this time, throughout communion and the couple songs we've got here, just to let you and God do some work at what that might be and what that might look like for you this week. And so, Father, I pray, as we dive into communion, as we remember the sacrifice of Jesus and his body broken for us, his blood shed for us, that we may have forgiveness of sins, and more than that, that we may have life with you. And this invitation to have life with you is a life with you that's ongoing, that's toward something better, toward something more. And God, there's so much of our life that sometimes we want to keep secret. We want to keep separate because we think for some reason we can manage it better, that we can make it work, or that we can hide it. So, Father, would you help us to live with a humbled heart that's open before you and that's yielded to you, that we might be people that just walk in your shadow, in your favor and in your grace as you lead us forward toward being healthy and whole. Father, as we worship you now, as we, through communion, as we remember, and as we worship in song, would you stir each one of us specifically? What's the one secret compartment that we've got to open up, give you access to, that you can change us for the better? Because life's better with you than separate away from you. We ask that in Jesus' name. Amen.